Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live on this Wednesday afternoon. So happy to have you with us. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. I got a great hour this hour, and you're welcome to call 888-318-7884 if you'd like to get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Dr. Angela Frank. She's a professor of theology at St. John's Seminary in Boston. She writes on sexual ethics, and she's done all kinds of scholarly work there, and you can find her writing all around the internet. You can visit her website to find it all gathered. It's called AngelaFranks.com. And some of her recent writing has been kind of around the problem or the disconnect between the secular idea of the human body and the Catholic idea of the human body. The secular idea of the value of the human body, the purpose of the human body, what is a human body, what is a human person in relation to their body, all of that. And what's the secular view and what's the Catholic view of those things. Dr. Angela Franks, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Very glad to be here.
So, this, what is a body? Maybe you can't answer what is a human without answering what is a body. And this is the question that you have been asking recently: what is a human? So, start there wherever you'd like. What do we need to know as Catholic people that will help us to understand who we are, so we can live as we're supposed to live?
Yeah, so we were really blessed in the 20th century to have some really good magisterial reflection on this question coming from John Paul II. And in his Theology of the Body, what he tells us is that the body reveals the person. And so for John Paul II, the body is a sign, it's the visible reality that expresses us as people. And the value of the body is for the human body, our value is related to our value as human beings. And the fact that the human body, and only the human body, out of all the other animal bodies that are out there, only the human body expresses a person.
Yes.
And so that's both its value, but also its limits, right? It's not the whole story. It's one piece of the story of being human, a necessary piece, but it's not the whole piece. And so I think that what's happened in, you know, especially in the last 75 years or so, the value of the body has been detached from the value of the person. And we try to make sense of the body on its own without understanding it as a sign of the person. And so the way I like to think about it, it's kind of as though, you know, if aliens came to Earth and saw a stop sign, like it wouldn't mean anything to them, right?
Or
like,
no, you know, nothing. Right.
Stoplight. It doesn't mean anything, right? So if a sign loses its connection to what it's telling you about, then it doesn't mean anything anymore. And that's what's happened with the body, where like it doesn't mean anything anymore. We don't think of it as being a sign of the person. And so therefore, we're very confused about what it means at all, if it means anything.
So we end up behaving as if the body either matters too much or too little. Is that a fair way of summarizing what you're saying about this modern or lack of conception of what the body really is?
Yeah, exactly right. It's both too important because we think it has to stand on its own. So instead of it being a sign pointing to the person, instead of the stop sign having a function to tell us something, we have to make it mean something on its own without any reference to a person. And that's just never going to work. And so we try to make it independent of the person, and that doesn't work. Or we just belittle it. We just say, oh, it's just, you know, happiness is just a bunch of neurons firing. You know, what we do in our body's not that important. You know, so we either like make it an idol or we make it garbage, and neither one is true. And so the church helps us to both recognize the importance of the body, but also to relativize it.
There's a problem even with the Christian view of the body, however. Even a Christian who says, I believe in the soul, for example, I believe it, it's a problem, a misconception, I think, of the soul, if I'm understanding your writing correctly, that the idea that the soul is in the body or is, I think it's Frank Sheed you quote in one spot about it, it's like a butter spread thinly over the body. Yeah, but so we don't say the body's just a machine. We don't say the body is the totality of who I am. So how are we to understand the soul and its relationship to the body?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because we often treat the soul as something disconnected from the body. But in fact, the philosophy that the church wound up embracing says that the soul is intimately connected to the body for us as human beings, because the soul, the technical language is, the soul forms our body. It's the thing that makes everything hold together. And we can kind of see this, like when someone dies, when the soul leaves the body, what you have left is a corpse, and eventually it's just gonna decay because, like, there's nothing holding it together. But when you're living, that doesn't happen, right? Like, right. Everything's being held together and is functioning the way it's supposed to. And so,
it sometimes feels like it's all falling apart, Angela.
So the soul is really the life of our body that's holding it together. But for us, that's true of my pet hedgehogs. I have two pet hedgehogs, and they're alive, and they're being held together by their little hedgehog life.
Soul.
But yeah, in fact, that's confusing to people, but yeah, that's the language we use, in fact. But for us, our souls are also the things that give us the power to know and to love. So these spiritual powers that transcend the physical, and that's why human beings are so weird, because we're this combination of body and soul, but the soul both transcends the body and the fact that we can know and love, but it also is the thing that holds together and keeps alive our body. So it's not just something that's kind of disconnected from our body.
Yeah. A lot of people in Boston have hedgehogs, or do you think you might be the only person in the city of Boston to have hedgehogs?
I know I'm not the only person, because the person who gave me hedgehogs also has hedgehogs, but there might not be many of us.
Is that person still your friend, or did that end it?
We love our hedgehogs.
I'm sure you do. Everyone who has them loves them, as far as I know, but you're the only one I know. Our number is 888-318-7884. We're talking about the Catholic understanding of the body, the Catholic Christian understanding of the body, as juxtaposed with the modern secular, I almost am loath to say understanding of the body, because it's a lack of understanding of the body, really, a darkness about what the body is and what it is for, and therefore how it is to be treated. Your questions are welcome. 888-318-7884. I have to, Dr. Franks, I have to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to ask you about the person who might say, okay, this is very interesting theoretical talk, but in practical terms, why does it matter that we get our thinking right about the body? But I'll let you feed the hedgehogs, and we'll be right back after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Hi, this is Dave Vashers, president of Annunciation Radio. The scripture says when the word of God goes out, it doesn't return void, but accomplishes that for which it was sent. We regularly hear from individuals whose lives have been dramatically changed as a result of listening to Catholic radio. Tell a family member, tell a friend, tell the whole world. Change your station, and it'll change your life.
The world needs EWTN Catholic Radio, now more than ever.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks again for being with us. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Dr. Angela Franks is our guest. She teaches theology in Boston at the seminary there in Boston, the Catholic seminary there in Boston, and has a, an article in called "What Is a Human?" in the Catholic World Report that you can find and read. That's related to what we're talking about, and other articles, other writings on sexuality, the human body, sexual ethics. You can find all of that at AngelaFranks.com. AngelaFranks.com. So it does, I think, to some folks, it, there's probably a sense of, okay, what's the practical application of this? You know, I mean, and I suppose that has to do with our modern, you know, we always want to know, okay, give me the bottom line. What's the bottom line on this? So is there a practical reason to be concerned that we get our thinking about the body right?
That it's a great question. It's very practical, in fact. One of the things that John Paul II talks about is the importance of integration, that in order to be a healthy human being, we have to integrate the fact that we have all of these aspects of ourselves that pertain to being physical, to having a body, and all of these aspects about ourselves that include our spiritual powers. We are not healthy human beings by rejecting a part of us. And the default way of dealing with the fact that we have a body in our world around us is often to pretend we don't. You can find a religious version of this maybe, where it's just kind of, you know, people kind of want to get away from the body and think it's, they're kind of vaguely ashamed that they have a body. So like, there's certainly, it's not, this is not only something you find among non-believers, but, you know, back when I was in high school and junior high, eating disorders were a thing that were talked about. And if you, and I've done a little bit of research and writing on that. And if you look at that, it's pretty clear that what's going on is that people are denying the fact that they have a body, or they're trying to minimize that aspect of themselves, often very literally. And you find that today, I think, in questions around transgenderism, where people treat their body as the problem. You know, I don't feel, and so this is also what you see in eating disorders, I think. I don't feel comfortable in my skin. So what's the problem? Well, the problem must be my skin and yes. not me and my feelings. Right. And so it's actually extremely practical and extremely important that we learn to accept that we have bodies, and that, that this is part of being a healthy human being, to have a body. It's not something that we want to reject or get rid of.
This idea that this is a very striking thought, that, and I don't think we realize we're doing it, we turn the body into the problem. That certainly in this whole transgender conversation or whatever we're having about transgenderism, the movement that we're in the midst of, there's a refusal, really, to say that the problem is anything other than the body is not right. And that, what do you say to a society that wants to put all the blame on the body when the body's not even capable of being this level of a problem?
Exactly right. Yeah. I mean, to get back to, you know, our love of the practical, one thing you can say is it's not going to work, right? Okay, just like right. you don't treat eating disorders by handing an anorexic diet pills. Like, it doesn't work. If people have spiritual and emotional and psychological challenges and problems, it doesn't work to treat those problems as bodily problems. Now, you know, of course, there can be, you know, pharmaceuticals can be helpful and things, but like the treatment for gender dysphoria, for having a sense that one doesn't belong in one's body, the standard treatment today is to treat that as a bodily problem, and it's just simply doomed to failure. And you know, we're beginning to see here and there, we've seen in Great Britain that people are starting to sue because they're like, you know, I was an adolescent, you put me on hormones, you did all of these things, often irreversible to my body, and I didn't have a bodily problem.
Right.
And you guys, as the health experts, should have known that the 16-year-old is not maybe going to grasp that, but the doctors certainly should. And we're not in a place in our society where that's being recognized.
No, I think that that's right. We're going to have a wave of regret and recrimination coming up very shortly when people reach an age where they're mature enough to go, I was manipulated into this, or you treated my body when there was nothing wrong with my body. We used to have a term for that. It was called mutilation, but you can't say that anymore. You're not permitted to say that. Is it also fair to say that there's a social dimension to this, that on the social level, we, and this is not an idea that's original to me, so if it's a good idea, then I just want you to know it didn't come from me, but some women have told me this, that often a woman's body is treated as a social problem, in that if she wants to participate in the workplace, for example, what needs to be solved is her body, not the workplace. If she wants to have children and be a professional, what needs to be solved is the body, you know, wanting to produce that many. Is her fertility, in other words, is a problem. It's not that our society has a wider problem of not integrating mothers, for example, into the rest of society.
Yeah, so I actually, you know, I've been on the show before talking about eugenics and contraception. And so this is an idea that's like 100 years old, more than 100 years old, that goes back to Margaret Sanger, who began scapegoating female fertility for basically being the cause of all problems. Like whatever problem there was, right, Sanger thought female fertility was the problem. But it was an outlier to think that way. And part of the sexual revolution was to really mainstream that way of thinking. And it really is true that women's bodies, female fertility, is scapegoated more than male fertility. And I think part of it is that it reminds, when female bodies are ordered toward reproduction, when they're having babies and they're nursing and they're doing all of these things, it's a protest against the idea that a female body is simply an object of sexual use and manipulation and exploitation, right? It's kind of it's sort of the anti-porn, right? The anti-pornography, to have, you know, women using their sexual organs, their reproductive organs, for sexual and reproductive things. So what we're facing with in our pornified culture is that there's deep discomfort with the female body on the part of women, you know, multiple reasons. But one of these reasons, Abigail Favalli has written really good stuff on this. One of the reasons is that, you know, we're living in this sex-saturated culture where girls growing up don't want to be the object of, you know, sexual exploitation. And, you know, they feel very self-conscious anyway. They're teenage girls, right, going through puberty. And so in a sense, maybe eating disorders, which are still with us, of course, but, you know, sure, maybe 30 years ago, that was one protest against this, you know, their sexuality and feeling like they were a sexual object. And these days, they just decide not to be women anymore. And so it seems to be that, adolescents who are saying all of a sudden they have gender dysphoria and they want to have this treated, it tends to be girls more than boys. And it's probably partly because of this, the sex saturated culture that we're in. And so it is part of the problem, that we're used to treating female bodies as problems to fix.
Yeah.
And that's really the transgender mindset.
Dr. Angela Franks is our guest. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. A caller who dropped, but I want to share her question, Leslie from Florida. If a person's soul leaves the body, is it still the same person? Is that body a different person at that point? And this has to do with getting a proper understanding of the relationship between body and soul. How does a Catholic theologian answer that?
It's a good question. What you have when the soul leaves the body is a corpse. You don't have a different person, because that would imply that there's a new body-soul complex, and precisely what you don't have anymore is a soul. And so to have a human person, you need both the body and the soul. Now, this leads to really sticky questions about, like, the soul after death and that sort of thing. But The traditional understanding is that at the resurrection of the dead, when it's not only which is not so much talking about our souls living on, but in particular talking about our bodies being raised, that it's really our bodies somehow, however God works that miracle, it's our bodies that our souls need to come back home to. And so there is, this is really unique to Christianity, that there is this eternity to our bodies, but it needs to be that body-soul union together to have the person.
For it to be a person, right, right. So yeah. So this view then of this body-soul, what did you call, complex? Is that what you just said, body-soul complex or composite maybe? Would that be okay to use or no?
Sure.
Yep. Okay.
I think that works.
So this is important for us because to understand to, as well, because when you talked about, you used a word earlier called integration. And when you write about this, it's just so compelling. What does it mean to be integrated from the lowest levels of ourselves up to the highest levels of ourselves? Not treating any of those levels as problematic, but treating them all as needing to be integrated with one another.
Yeah, we're very complicated. You know, it starts all the way down to the physical and the chemical and then the biological. And kind of as you go up the ladder, there are fewer and fewer other creatures that are on the at that level with us, right?
But, right, right.
You know, so you can have rocks and they're, you know,
physical things.
Laws of physics and chemical things applied to them, but they're not alive, right? So they don't operate in the biological. So you go from the physical and the chemical and the biological. And then when you get to the higher animals, then you have these things that are tied to more complicated bodies. You have the capacity for emotions. You have the capacity to form social networks like you see with bees and ants and all that kind of thing, wolves. But then in human beings, because we go even further, we have reason and we have will, we can think and we can understand and we can choose. We can understand ourselves as that whole complex and we can choose to embrace that and bring the body along with us as we use those distinctively human capacities to know and love. And so that's what's so beautiful about something like marriage, though also something like celibacy, where the body's not left behind. The body's an intrinsic part of this free, rational commitment that somebody's making to another human being in marriage or to, say, the priesthood or the religious life. You make that as a whole embodied person, and you're giving that whole gift of yourself to God, both body and soul, all of those powers together, as opposed to saying, well, you know, I'm gonna be celibate because, like, my body makes me uncomfortable and I want to run away from it, which is basically the caricature of Catholic celibacy. That's not the truth of what, that's not real integration.
Okay, so this integration, however, it because the body is not just a nothing with no moral value, but it's integrated into the person that has tremendous, you know, value beyond what really we have the language to describe the value of a human person. That means that there are certain limits on the use of the body that do not apply in the mind of the person who takes the secular view as the body as basically either a machine or just a receptacle for the higher soul. And so I don't know if you know of this phrase that people say now. It's called sex positive. And it means that they're not going to accept these limits on sexuality, you know, that basically, I think it's against the Christian view. Really, even though it doesn't sell itself that way, that's in fact what it is. The opposite to this view is Christianity. It strikes me, and I want to ask you, because you're very, very insightful in this area, that the use of the phrase sex positive to talk about promiscuity, for example, or you know, many partners or many different experiences is propaganda, because that's not positive. And that's what I would like you to respond to. Am I correct in that thinking?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So sex positive feminism really took over the women's rights movement when the sexual revolution got off the ground. And it is propaganda. You're correct. Because, you know, who wants to be
sex negative.
Yeah. that sounds bad. Yeah. Right? But what is, you know, as you're saying, what it simply means is, so this idea is like, we're going to be positive about all possible experiences of sex and not say that there's any limits. But that's not fully human activity, because it's part of being human to make choices that align with what's really good for the person, right? You could have, you know, you could have food positive dietitians who would say, just eat all the candy you want, because we're not going to say no. That doesn't make any sense at all, because you're like, no, actually, that's counterproductive, because if we just eat all the candy we want, that's actually has a negative effect on us, and it's actually a negative thing to do. And the same is true with even more so when it comes to sexuality, because sexuality it's actually very similar to eating in the sense that it's a natural biological reality, but it's also this expression of intimacy and vulnerability. And if we treat it as a body's coming together or something that doesn't somehow actually impact people, we're lying. Women do care if he calls the next morning, right? It's just hard not to care. And so that's the real sex positivity is Christianity.
Talking about the Catholic view, the Catholic Christian view of the human body with Dr. Angela Franks, your calls welcome. 888-318-7884. I didn't know she was going to attack candy, but we'll be right back with more Dr. Angela Franks right after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers is doing it again. We're holding our 7th annual Apologetics Conference this September in beautiful San Diego, California, and we'd like to see you there. Join us September 23rd to 26th for a lively and inspiring conference with an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to jumpstart your faith. It's a great chance to meet all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and very special guests as we spend 4 days talking about worshiping and adoring our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. This is where it all begins. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to ignite, inspire, and inform your faith. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Enter promo code EARLY to save $30. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll mark the feast of St. Junipero Serra by doing a virtual pilgrimage to the California missions with Diana Von Glahn from The Faithful Traveler. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We're very, very grateful you're here with us. Thank you for being with us on this Wednesday afternoon, or maybe it's a Thursday morning if you're listening in the Philippines or Australia or Singapore or anywhere on the other side of the international dateline. We're just as happy to have you with us as we can be. Dr. Angela Franks is our guest. She's a professor of theology at St. John's Seminary in Boston. And it's one of those things where we think where the seminarians are getting some good education. And we're talking about her writing. She writes on sexual ethics. You can find all of her work at angelafranks.com. But we're talking about recent writing on the human body. What is a human is one of her recent articles. That one's in Catholic World Report. You can find her other writing at the website I just mentioned, AngelaFranks.com. And we're talking about why the Catholic view of the body is different and continues to be different, hasn't yet acquiesced to pressure to change and become like the rest of culture, but also why that's good news for us, why that's the Catholic Christian view of the body is one that is ennobling. And if we embrace it, can actually make a practical difference in the quality of our life, our own lives, and the life of our fellows. You're welcome to call with your questions or comments. If you disagree with us, you are always welcome here. If you disagree with what we've said about sex positivity or what we've said about transgender issues, you're always welcome. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. We just ask that you be nice to me. You can be as tough as you want on Dr. Franks, but you got to be nice to me when you call. Dr. Franks, I guess the thing that I want to ask you about is that the consumerist, the relationship between the kind of modern consumerist idea and the modern idea of the body, where it often seems like the body either only exists A, to consume things, or B, to be consumed by others, either by its beauty or by its sexual power or that kind of thing. Is that a fair analysis? And how do we cure that? How do we convince people to move away from this consumerist view? Because it does actually bring a lot of wonderful sensations to people.
Yeah, that's really, really well put. Yeah, the generalized consumerism that we have all around us has definitely swept up the body with it. And you're right that, you know, either the body is the thing consuming or the thing being consumed. John Paul II, in one of his earlier writings, he notes that the word consumere in Latin means to use up. Oh. And so that I think is a helpful lens into the question of consumerism, because you can say, on the one hand, you know, well, what's the problem with consumerism? Like you said, it's enjoyable. Yeah. Get some enjoyable sensations. Like, what's the problem? Are you so against pleasure? You know, and of course, there's nothing wrong with consuming per se, but it's when it becomes an ism, when it really takes over a life, when our life becomes ordered toward more consumption, as opposed to the consumption being ordered toward a genuinely flourishing life, right? So we have to consume food, say, but if the whole purpose of our life, if we kind of organize our life to lead to better consumption of food, that means things are disordered. They're yes. not, they're out of whack. And so when we treat our bodies like that, you see this a lot with like designer babies, for example. So you see this with human reproduction, where there's this tendency or this urge to view a baby as a consumer product, you know, like how blonde right. and brainy can my baby be? I remember having a conversation with somebody who was having a hard time conceiving, and she said, all my life, I've been able to do whatever I wanted to do if I set my life to it, yeah. and I don't see why this should be any different.
Wow.
And the only thing I could say was, babies are still a gift, you know, like, but that's, right. you know, but that's the consumerist idea, you know, that mm-hmm. the baby is like a little product that we want to have, you know, and can we like check all the boxes
yes.
to have the right product come out? And that's a consumerist mentality where what's ruling the day are our desires rather than the good of the thing that you're doing. In other words, can I contribute to this baby's life? Can I be a good mother? Can I lead this baby to virtue? You know, so that's why it's so important. You know, Catholicism doesn't deal with the good things of the world by saying, get rid of them. It says, yes, they're good, but in what order, you know, like they can't be the most important good because that can only be God. So we have this challenge of aligning all the good things of the world so that they lead us to God instead of leading us away from God.
Again, Dr. Angela Franks is our guest. 888-318-7884 is our number. Chris in San Antonio, Texas is on the line. Chris is listening to Guadalupe Radio in San Antonio. Glad to have you, Chris. Go ahead with your question for our guest, Dr. Angela Franks.
Thank you. I'm going to try to get this question out. Years ago when I was teaching my son, I didn't have anything to teach him with, so I bought an old Baltimore Catechism and where it teaches that man is a creature made it, composed of body and soul. And so it really struck home with me about the body. It's not just a soul, it's a body and soul. But from an intellectual standpoint, I know the body is composed of many different elements, but six major types of elements like atom, hydrogen, carbon, and the others. And those are interchangeable. I mean, as we're growing, our bodies are taking in elements or giving off elements, but somehow it's our body, and it's always in a state of flux over the years. So what does the church teach, or like the integration of, like when I think of a resurrection, I really don't have no problem with it. Scientifically, I mean, if you got the blueprint, let's say DNA, and you have all the elements, and you have the power of God, you can reconstruct a body. But how is it our body? And it gets more, I guess, into a philosophical question. I'm just kind of curious if that topic's ever been approached or...
Sure, yeah. I think you're asking the right person, too. In what sense can we identify a person if the body is in this constant state of taking in and giving off and really becoming physically something new constantly?
Yeah, that is a great question. And it's a question that philosophers in one way or the other have been asking for centuries. So it's, you know, you're in good company, Chris. We are this strange combination of stability and change. And so all of that change that's very real that you're describing, you know, that all of our cells are turning over, though not the neurons in our cerebral cortex, if I'm remembering that correctly, which is an interesting point in itself. Huh. But other than that, all of our cells are constantly turning over. And how is it still my body? And so you can kind of go, like, some philosophers have just said, well, it's not, you know, and they kind of just kind of take it to its illogical conclusion. But we know instinctively that this is my, you know, like if, I mean, my kids, you know, if somebody's sitting too close to them on the couch, they're like, get away. Like they know it's their body and they have a very good sense of where their body begins and ends. And so how is it? Well, so that's one reason why the soul is such an important part of the equation, because the soul is one piece that can help us explain how is it that we have continuity and identity over time. Because even though our, you know, all those elements and so forth, everything's turning over, our soul is holding it together again as this body and not that body, as a living body and not a dead body. And when the soul and the body detach, in fact, all of that flux, it really just disperses, right? Like, so all of our elements do disperse, and eventually even, you know, the skeletons crumble away into dust. And so it really requires the soul to hold together a living body and really be the driver, so to speak, in all of that change, kind of keeping things on course and going in all together in the same direction.
Chris, does it make sense to you that that you would refer to the soul to explain that continuity?
One thing that really comes to mind is when Jesus, he rose from the dead and he ascended, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then Mary was assumed into heaven, right?
Yes.
So Jesus is in heaven with his mother and father, correct? And at the consecration, Jesus comes onto the altar, and where St. Paul says, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. I'm speaking in reference to Christ and his church. And so the attack on this idea of soul and body, you know, I think that's where the attack's at, that we lose the sight that it goes back to the Eucharist. The Eucharist is the body and blood and soul and divinity of Christ. It's a human person with a body and soul. And so all of that, you know, I'm trying to...
Chris, I think it's beautiful what you're doing, actually. And it does seem to me that there's something fundamental at the root of that, Dr. Franks, in that the incarnation of Christ, whatever else is revealed to us, the understanding of God become man is an affirmation of the body as important to God, that it's not an add-on or a disposable item. Would you agree?
Yeah, that's in many ways is what's the stumbling block to the Greeks that Paul talks about, that we preach, that Christianity preaches the resurrection of the flesh that begins in Jesus's resurrection. And as you mentioned, Chris, that this continues, this is a continual presence. So even though Jesus' body and soul ascends to heaven, there still is this continual sacramental presence of his whole human reality, body, blood, soul, and divinity, in particular in the Eucharist, and then in a mystical way in the church. And so Jesus's body is not something that was experienced by the apostles and the first Christians, and that now is completely remote from us. That it was important that Jesus's body continue to be sacramentally present to all of us in the church. And so I do think, and maybe this is where you're going, Chris, I really do think that the contemporary confusion about the body has led to confusion about the church as the body of Christ, because if bodies don't mean anything, then why do we have a church? I mean, it's just basically a big bureaucracy. If, you know, it's like a giant Department of Motor Vehicles or something, if it's not the body of Christ, you know? And so I think it affects the church, and I think it's affected how Catholics believe and understand the Eucharist, which is something we've gotten data on in the last, 5 years or so, that there's been this declining belief in the Eucharist. And I think one of the problems is that people don't know what to make of their own bodies, much less Jesus's body.
Wow. Yeah.
And what the heck does it mean that Jesus's body is there? Like, why would you do that? Like, why is that important if you don't understand what the human body means to begin with?
Chris, thank you so much for allowing us to have that conversation. Thank you for the questions and for the call. I have to take a quick break. We'll get to the callers who are on the line. Just hang on the line. We're going to get to you right after this. Very quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Angela Franks on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Unplanned, the true story of Abby Johnson.
I would be the youngest director in Planned Parenthood history.
She believed in a woman's right to choose.
I've had an abortion myself, so I don't have any problem with another woman making the same decision.
Until the day she saw something that changed everything.
Tiny, perfect little baby. And then it was just gone.
Now she's pulling back the curtain on the abortion industry. Unplanned.
Available at EWTNRC.com and the EWTN app.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. There's two sales I keep forgetting to tell you about, and I got it now because I think they're both ending tonight at midnight. I'm not sure. But the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics, I know that that one's ending tonight, the one where you can get a full course for $50 or one of the mini courses for $25. If you go over to shop.catholic.com and just click on the School of Apologetics section, you can see the whole list of courses and sign up for any course you want. And that's a very, very low price, but we'd love you to have it. Summer, great time to take a School of Apologetics course. The other one is my book, A Teacher of Strange Things, Who Jesus Was, What He Taught, and Why People Still Follow Him. It's 25% off when you check out and you use the promo code TEACHME, and I'm assuming that, I actually don't know, but it's the last day of the month, and often these deals go away at the end of the month. That also, you just go to shop.catholic.com and click on A Teacher of Strange Things and get 25% off when you check out using the promo code TEACHME. That's the 25% off is on the print copy and on the electronic copy. Our guest is Dr. Angela Franks. She's a wonderful writer on sexual ethics. She's a teacher. She is a professor at the seminary there in Boston, and you can find out all about her at angelafranks.com. I want to read you the next question. Again, a caller dropped. I don't know why we're dropping so many callers, but we've been dropping a lot of callers this hour. I think there are some people in the secular world making the same realization about sexual ethics and the human body that the Catholic Church has already established. I think if they investigate further, they would find that the Church is teaching the same things that they are discovering. Your response, that comes from Simon in Minnesota. Your response, Dr. Franks.
Yeah, I think that we saw, I don't know, how long has it been now, 5 years ago or so, with hashtag MeToo, we saw a lot of discontent being expressed, especially by women, over the sexual status quo, and obviously lots of problems with MeToo as well. But you did see this, that people were not happy, and it was suddenly acceptable for women to say that they were not happy with the sexual revolution, which normally you're not allowed to say that in polite secular company. And I think also another factor is the back to nature, the green influence, you know, where people are like, okay, wait, I'm buying hormone-free chicken, and yet I'm like pumping really powerful hormones into myself via the pill. Like, this doesn't seem quite right. And in fact,
it's not
a very green thing to do at all. And if, you know, you should investigate hormonal contraception if you're on it, because there are definitely some health considerations. And so I think that people are, you know, it's sadly the one thing we can always rely on with evangelization is that sin makes people unhappy. Eventually, even if they don't know they're sinning, even if they're doing it with the best possible intentions, you know, like, we don't know why it is people are sinning, but it just naturally is not, it's like, you know, eating the candy all day long, not to, you know, knock on candy too much, but
it
just eventually makes you not function the way you're supposed to as a human being. And so I do think we're starting to see that with the sexual revolution. I don't know exactly where that's going to take us, but no doubt the Holy Spirit will help us make use of that.
There has been a lot of media lately about the COVID year. People thought there would be a baby boom that would come from the COVID year. Apparently, exactly the opposite is happening. And we have seen countries like Italy, of all places, Italy, you know, over the last 25 years, not even having a replacement level of children. It does seem like we're getting there in the United States. I think many people thought, no, we're not going to get there in the United States. We're a different kind of country. Do you think that this is related to this, the body as a problem mentality of the world?
Definitely, yeah. I think, ironically, the sexual revolution, though it's removed the moral framework that used to be around sexuality that would limit our sexual activity. So the sexual revolution sort of removed that framework on the one hand. But on the other hand, one of the odd results is that people are having less sex. And one of the things that sociologists have known for a long time is that the people who report the most and the best sex are actually married couples. This is not news at all. This has been around for decades. And so when we have, as we have in our culture, a disintegration of a marriage culture where fewer fewer people are getting married. They're getting married later. So it's just, yeah, it's like people are opting out of the sexual revolution. And of course, the other factor in all of this is pornography.
Right.
Relationships are hard. Like, that's just simply the case. And so a lot of people are just running away from them. And so it's surprising on the one hand, but on the other hand, it actually makes a lot of sense when you think about the sexual revolution, that the sexual revolution says that sex is not meaningful and it's not about love. And so, you know, at some point that makes it just not very interesting to people.
Right. Yeah. Especially when, as you said, there's this pornography that's so widely available, and the thing that makes culture go in many ways is the male pursuit of the female, and men just stop pursuing. And I don't know if where women are, but I do think that that's a real problem among young men, that they don't pursue women.
Yeah, and that's been, sociologists have studied that phenomenon too. And so that's also something that's kind of been known and documented. And, you know, I should add, given how widespread pornography is, you know, that there are Catholic resources out there to help people who are struggling with pornography addiction. And the websites aren't coming to mind offhand, but there really are good resources out there. And so, yeah.
Chastity.com, I think, is one. I think that's a friend of ours. I think, is that Everett's? Site? Yeah, chastity.com. It's more or less a clearinghouse for great stuff. So, and it's something that I do think that this is something that it probably takes a long time for the Catholic Church to gear up, but there are more and more ministries in this regard it's hard because the shame that people experience around it is one of the things that the shame and isolation is one of the consequences of the thing itself. And then so it becomes a kind of cycle of decline that you just have to break. And so chastity.com is what I would suggest. What is a Human is a recent article that our guest, Dr. Angela Franks, published in the Catholic World Report. You can find that and much of her other writing at angelafranks.com. So now that we have come around to marriage, I would like to ask you about marriage and the misconception of the human body, because the idea that marriage is a permanent union between a man and a woman, I don't even know how small the minority of people that accept that anymore is. Is this diminishment about the idea of marriage? And I don't think it's bigoted to use the word diminishment. A lifelong union of a man and a woman is such a great glory of creation and of grace that it's any other idea of marriage is a diminishment, I think. Is this related then, this diminishment in the idea of marriage, also related to this diminishment of the idea of the human body, of what the human body is?
Yeah, the two really stand and fall together. If you don't understand that the body is this expression of a person, then the union of a man and woman in marriage suddenly becomes a little bit arbitrary, right? Because the part of why fidelity and commitment and an orientation to children is so central to marriage is because in marriage you have the coming together of two different kinds of people, of a male and a female, who are human beings who have this immense interior richness that they can express by means of their body, and not only sexually, but, you know, talking and all the little gestures that we do, right? Like, our body is expressing us all the time, not only just in sexual situations. And so the mystery of that relationship that is also intrinsically fruitful, that it's oriented toward not only a fruitful love and a fruitful relationship between the man and the woman, but toward children. That's a much richer, academics like to say, thicker idea of marriage than the really kind of paper thin idea that we have in our culture, where it's what I call the cotton candy definition of marriage. And you see it in all sorts of Supreme, you know, different court decisions on same-sex marriage. They always use this cotton candy definition of marriage. I say that because it's like sweet it sounds really sweet, but it's like really airy and it's insubstantial. And that definition is almost always that marriage is between two people who love and are committed to each other.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, that sounds really sweet. Like, what are we against love, you know, and commitment? Like, how can you be anti-love? But I'd like to point out, you know, hopefully you have loving and committed relationships to all sorts of people. Like, it's not a definition that actually defines anything specific. It actually is a very vague definition. I like to think I have loving, committed relationships with my friends.
Right.
Right. But right. They're not marriages, right? And so, like, all of those definitions leave out, kind of in this almost sort of Victorian prudish sort of way, leave out the important thing, namely that marriage is about sex, like that it's
and sex makes babies.
A relationship that can lead to babies.
Yeah. Yeah. Dr. Angela Franks has been our guest. I hope you will visit her at angelafranks.com. You can find her article, What is a Human, in the Catholic World Report. Dr. Franks, as always, a great pleasure to talk with you for an hour. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. Is that right, Darren? 2 hours of open forum? Call up, ask anything you want. Whether you're Catholic or not, everybody's welcome. Any question about the Catholic faith, welcome. We'll do that, God willing, tomorrow right here on Catholic Answers Live.